Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Oh, we're going back to Olivia Newton-John now, huh?
All right.
All right, I'm game. What's our theme here, bud?
Nothing. I just went to a Yacht Rock playlist, and she was on there, and so I was like, okay, perfect.
There we go. Welcome back to the third hour of our Tuesday morning visit. I'm Pat Kreitlow. That's Luke Mathers, who's learning more and more about Yacht Rock every day. But Turnabout's Fair Play, he tried to actually teach me a song from 2022 in the last hour. And he failed miserably. So right now it's still Yacht Rock 1, Modern Rock and Roll nothing, but we'll continue to press on it. Later this hour, we're going to take the next segment and talk all about a brand new plan just unveiled by Governor Tony Evers on what he would like to see done with the state's anticipated record $5 billion surplus. It's something that is just sitting there. It's doing nothing for you. It's doing nothing for me. Don't think for a moment that if Scott Walker were still the governor and Republicans were running the legislature, that it would still be sitting there. It would be out the door, lickety split, and almost certainly primarily in ways to cut taxes for corporations and the wealthiest taxpayers. But because Governor Evers and his veto pen are still there, Republicans would rather sit on it and hope that Tim Michaels wins and then put the money to use come January. Governor Evers is upping the ante here, not just saying, here's what I would have proposed in my last special session, but here's what we're going to do, you know, coming up if he's still sitting in that office in the East Wing of the Capitol. So we'll have more about that coming up in our next segment here. But I also wanted to apologize and also ask for guidance from Luke on a couple of things here. Apologies. I realized as I leaned back over here, somebody could probably see the shirt that was on the chair back behind me here. And I just want to explain for those of you watching the video feed or any of the videos that I do here from the Lake Wissota Bureau and studio, there are a lot of costume changes that go on in this room because you have an open window to the south. You want to be warm. You want to be comfortable rather in warm weather. So there's a lot of t-shirts, but that's not necessarily appropriate for a video when you're doing an interview by Zoom or a radio show, as the case may be. So there's always a shirt standing by with a collar, you know, something that looks somewhat professional. It's not the suit and tie I used to wear on TV every single day, but you know, again, it's not the beat up old t-shirt that Luke is wearing, for example, because he's in the privacy of a radio booth. So there, it's to the point where my wife may have referred to me once or twice or three or four times as Beyonce for the costume changes that I go through. You know, suddenly she'll see me running through at, you know, 2 minutes to the hour, whatever hour it is, and then come back with a different shirt. And, you know, I'll just say something like, oh, I got a news meeting, or, you know, I've got this interview. And she'll just say, okay, Beyonce, and send me on my way. So if you occasionally notice wardrobe behind me, I promise that all happens with the camera turned off. I then wanted to ask Luke what I'm supposed to do. What is the protocol for when you lend a container to your neighbor for food, for leftovers or something like that? Maybe, you know, we had a street party on the neighborhood recently, and it wasn't just returned. It was returned full of miniature candy bars, which I think is delightful. That was so literally sweet of our neighbors to return it. But that is doing absolutely nothing to help me with my girlish figure to, you know, to get the hourglass that I once had never. And so, as you can see, Luca, several of these have disappeared already. Have you returned things like an even better condition, like putting food or treats back into an empty container? I just return the container and say thank you.
I've heard of that before, but I've never done it myself because I don't have the forethought to do it. Like, well, I always think it'd be a great thing, but normally when I'm returning a Tupperware container of any sort, it's I see it on the table as I'm like running out last minute after forgetting it the last two or three times that I meant to bring it to the person I was seeing. So no, I have not filled it up with candy bars like that and returned it.
Well, on top of that, some of these mini bars are Snickers. What if I had a peanut allergy? They don't know that they were actually, you know, sending a deadly weapon back to our house. So I think I'm going to turn it back on them and say, how dare you share treats as you return my own container?
Well,
back
maybe somebody returned a container to them with the treats in them and they didn't want the treats either. And that's why they relayed them on to you then.
No, that wouldn't happen with candy. That would happen with zucchini. That's the thing I'm talking about, is I'm surprised I didn't get that. That's what you forward on to the neighbor. That's the gift that isn't truly a gift.
That's so way better than candy bars. Give me the zucchini. Send it my way.
Do you like, can you dip zucchini in chocolate the way that we do, like with peanut butter balls and nuts and marshmallows and raisins? Can you chocolate dip zucchini?
Well, I didn't chocolate dip it, but my zucchini bread this morning was with chocolate in it. So it's delicious. It was a great morning.
See, again, reaffirms my point that you have to add something in order to make zucchini bread, again, not taste like a sock. But that's, again, your choice. And again, Luke wants all of your zucchini. So look up our address, send it in. We will talk more about what to do with all of your money that the legislature is sitting on after this. You're up north. You will forgive me, there's going to be a lot of reading in this segment only because it is what some places would breathlessly call breaking news. It's not breaking news. Is like, you know, something's on fire. Just because something just happened doesn't make it breaking news, but this did just happen, and that is a release from Governor Tony Evers about new ways to cut taxes, reduce barriers to employment, help working families afford rising costs. It says basically it's in anticipation of brand new projections that are about to come out from the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, showing revenue projections, money coming in, will far exceed earlier estimates. And that simply means the economy is doing better in all sectors, but it's not doing better for everybody. And there are times that you can take when you have, what's the old saying? If you have $1,000 in the bank, but you have a hole in the roof, you don't have $1,000 in the bank. Well, there's other times when you have $2,000 in the bank and you'd better fix the hole in the roof before you find other ways to, shall we say, not use that money wisely. And that's the responsible path that Governor Evers is laying out here. So he's made that announcement this morning showing that it looks like the state will end the fiscal year with a $5 billion surplus, the highest ever balance in state history, and the state's rainy day fund. By the way, that doesn't include the state's rainy day fund, which is also at its highest ever level of $1.7 billion. And I hasten to add, the rainy day fund was at its highest level ever in the early months of the pandemic, when people were so in need. And the legislature did nothing with it. They did less than nothing. They went home for 9 months on a paid break rather than do anything other than go to court to fight Governor Evers on pandemic safeguards and fight against ways to make voting safer in elections during a pandemic. So that rainy day fund is at a record level as well. So Evers is putting out a plan that builds on the plan he announced earlier that would cut taxes for working families and veterans and seniors. They would reduce gas prices by repealing the minimum markup. It would cap copays for insulin, and it would make childcare more affordable and provide a caregiver's tax credit. The quote from Evers in his release says Wisconsin families have been through a lot over the past few years, and we know that while our state and our economy continue to improve, folks are still worried about rising costs and making ends meet, And if it were a drinking game, yes, you'd have to take a drink. He used the word folks in that sentence. He says, our state is in a strong fiscal position, and there's no reason that these dollars should just sit in state coffers when families need help now. We can help lower out-of-pocket costs for Wisconsinites today while providing long-term tax relief and still making sure we have readily available state resources to invest in our priorities in the next state budget. In anticipation of this, the governor is again renewing his call to use the state's $3.8 billion revenue surplus to provide a 10% tax cut for working families, restore the homestead tax credit to help seniors on fixed incomes, expand property tax relief for veterans with disabilities, and create the aforementioned caregiver tax credit. In total, Evers says the plan announced today provides over $600 million a year in relief now and into the future. And this would substantially exceed the annual tax relief under the governor's previously announced plan. This is, and then it goes into the details of all these various things. But, you know, the one that stands out to me is that insulin copay cap. Release from the governor's office says that according to the American Diabetes Association, 439,000 adults in Wisconsin have diagnosed diabetes. An estimated 135 more have diabetes but don't know it yet. And 1.6 million Wisconsinites have prediabetes. A quarter of insulin users have said that cost impacted their insulin use, sometimes to the point where people are rationing their medicine, which compromises their health, risks serious health consequences, including death. This is the kind of cap that Congress put into the Inflation Reduction Act that Republicans had removed through the parliamentarian. So when Democrats tried to put it back in as an amendment, Republicans voted against the amendment. They voted against capping insulin costs. There's the caregiver tax credit that this would be a tax credit for qualified expenses incurred by a family caregiver. Nearly $100 million in relief would go to an estimated 250,000 Wisconsinites. And on the child care side of things, the newly created child and dependent care credit would move up from 50% of the federal credit to 100% of the allowable federal credit. This will provide nearly $30 million in tax relief to 107,000 Wisconsinites who are claiming the child and dependent care credit currently. These are things that, again, were proposed by Governor Evers, but rejected by Republicans in the legislature. And he's saying, hey, kids, how'd you like to try it again? Now that the surplus is even higher and you can have both tax relief, actual tax cuts, and you can help some of the families that are most vulnerable, which, as we discussed earlier in the show, is ever-changing. Families on a dime can find themselves in some kind of a dire circumstance where they would benefit from a caregiver tax credit or a child independent credit or an insulin copay cap or the homestead credit. All of these things are things that can happen to families at any given point. And I always worry or just am concerned that there's too many people that assume the poors are, again, as some people like to call them, are like this monolithic block that are always there. It's always the same people. When we should know better than that. We should know that we all fall into circumstances or hard times. Just think of the better example, of course, would be natural disasters. How many times between flash floods, tornadoes, earthquakes, fires, have there been Americans, fellow Americans in need of help? And yet there are Republican members of Congress who have voted no to disaster relief to other parts of the country, who then have the audacity to seek out federal help when their area suffers from some kind of a natural catastrophe. It is a mindset that is still tough sometimes to comprehend in this day and age, especially from a faction of people that sure like to talk about religious values, religious freedom, and other certain aspects that invoke a sense of faith, but without the sense of compassion that should come along with it for your fellow man, woman, and child, whatever their religion, whatever their belief system. If they're in need and you have the resources and you're willing to help people who are more like you, why wouldn't you be willing to help other people who are in that kind of dire need? That's where we find ourselves right now, with recovering from a terrible pandemic, which of course is still going on right now, but from an economic standpoint, the economy is emerging, and there's ways to not waste the $2,000 in your bank account when there's a hole in the roof. I was so encouraged, and I was just telling Luke about what I saw over the commercial break here in the Washington Post. If you are on social media regularly, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. And for the rest, I will try to explain my best. But the headline says, how a photo of a woman yelling in a guy's ear became a viral meme. So it's the girl explaining meme. And Luke, have you only seen it, or have you actually used it as well?
See, I did not use that one. I used a new variation of it. There was actually a photo of U.S. Congressman Glenn Grothman and Republican gubernatorial candidate Tim Michaels.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so let's come back to that one.
So that was that was the iteration that I used, but I do know what you're referencing.
Yeah, so let's come back to the original iteration first, the girl explaining meme. And the poor woman in the photo, the young woman, her name is Denise Sanchez. And the article reads, over the past week, Denise Sanchez received a flood of texts letting her know her photo was all over Twitter. An image taken in 2018 of her seemingly talking passionately into the ear of her rather unamused ex-boyfriend has gone viral. It was, the article says, just a fleeting moment at a New Year's Eve music festival in Argentina, but has gained added meaning through each new post. It has become a template to shout about pop culture moments, air grievances, talk about the ending of Titanic, your take on the Marvel Universe, and anything and everything. And now apparently this had gone viral previously back in Sanchez's native Argentina back in 2019. But, you know, again, you know how things, you just never know what's going to become viral. You seriously don't. Just something strikes people and they share it. The article says, to set the record straight, no, Sanchez wasn't shouting into a void. She was actually singing a song, and that explains her arm gesturing off into the horizon. But as happens too often, Sanchez was unsuspectingly caught in the background of someone else's photo. A couple of months later, the photo's actual subject loaded to Twitter and said, put up a caption like, when strangers mess up your photos. But it has since been used so often, and you have to use it in all caps. So, of course, at Up North News, we had to use it. So we put out a tweet last week where she is yelling into the ear of her ex-boyfriend, it's not that he lives in Connecticut, just that he has a mansion there and a penthouse in Manhattan, and he probably couldn't win an election in Connecticut, but he tells the IRS he lives here 183 days a year, so it's good enough to be able to run for governor in Wisconsin, don't you think? Do I have to explain that again? I thought that was a pretty good use of it.
Yeah, and you fit in everything in those 280 characters. You use them to the full extent, and it was perfect.
Yeah, and many people have. I mean, it's been good for many a laugh, and you know, God bless Denise Sanchez for willing to go along. So yes, then there's been these variations on it. Anytime you can see like two people where one's animated and talking to the other person, or in this case, the side profiles of Tim Michaels and Congressman Glenn Grothman at some dinner someplace. And I don't have an example in front of me, but there's been some great captions on that as well.
Yeah, I tweeted it out under Devil Radio 92.7's Twitter page, so you can go follow Devil Radio there. But I essentially put it out saying, my mom's meatloaf's great. you should come and stay over sometime. But I know that's kind of a heck of a commute from Connecticut. So you, but we can maybe work it out. You can spend the night. My mom's meatloaf's nice. Great.
Nice, nice. Got Connecticut in there and mom the meatloaf. Always good to throw in a pop culture reference as well. Let's take a break and be back after this. You're up north. Baby, I can see your halo.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Yeah, you're never going to go wrong with Michael McDonald. Sometimes it's like you know me.
Or oh, Kenny Loggins, so rather. Sorry. Pat, sorry, what was sorry. That? You should have let it. You should have let it play out for a couple more seconds.
No, I just the keyboard was similar to something else. So, yep. All right. Reset the board to zero. It's been 0 days since Pat screwed up a Yacht Rock song.
All right. I'll get a little chalkboard. I can add that to the background here, and we'll get that exactly going. Just like, what's his name? Woody on Woody Page on what show did he do with ESPN? Around and not Around the Horn. Around the Horn. Yeah.
I love that board behind Woody Page. It's a little black. Well, it was started as a blackboard originally. How long has that show been on now? 20 years.
Oh yeah, it's been
on there. Yeah, I mean, I was anchoring the news on Channel 13 back then, and I was envious of that chalkboard. So I have this Wisconsin artwork, you know, hanging over my shoulder here. It's basically like, I don't know if it's marble or granite or what it is, you know, cut out beautifully and then framed. But I've often wished I could have that like box effect instead, like you would find on TV news, and we could do the Woody Page chalkboard on there. And apparently I will now have to write on that board 100 times. I will not mix up Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald. I will not mix up Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald. I will not mix up. During the commercial breaks, I try to look to see if there's anything else new to pass along before we wrap up our coffee break and before we start thinking about what's for lunch. And there's a lot that's predictable, shall we say, in the mailbag. And sometimes utterly so. The Wisconsin Republican Party put out a special statement today. And I forgive the eye roll, but statement on the anniversary of the Kenosha riots. I mean, if it were up to them, Kenosha would still be burning right now, because that was the fires they have danced around ever since. Fires that came from demonstrations against police violence. And in defending the violence, there has been this willing of the riots and the damage and the fires that resulted from it to never die. And to always use it. And it's been used in multiple campaign commercials already. Anything that is meant to scare voters into thinking that, up here in Chippewa Falls, you know, the downtown, a block of Bridge Street could be set on fire at any moment if the Kenosha horde gets up here. When they know damn well that's not what's going to happen. There were impassioned protests everywhere, and people did in fact break the law and vandalize things and destroy things. But rather than address again the root causes of the anger and passion that lead to this, the systemic racism that's involved, the overdue reforms needed to police, it is instead simply grabbed and used as a scare tactic in campaigns. It's why you have, again, attorney general candidates talking about law and order when attorneys general do not work on these kinds of things. They're working on matters pertaining to state government. We have an expectation. We should get back to an expectation that our leaders, even when running for office, act like leaders. And when they leave office, they should act like leaders. But something has changed in our national discourse that has removed that mantle of leadership, that aura of leadership. And of course, this leads us to our latest story about Donald Trump, where it's been discovered in all of the other files and things that he and his circus have had, sensitive election system files that were obtained by attorneys working to overturn the 2020 election were shared. These election system files were shared with election deniers, conspiracy theorists, and right-wing commentators, according to records that have been reviewed by the Washington Post. A Georgia computer forensics firm hired by Trump's attorneys placed these sensitive files on a server, and company records show that that information has been downloaded dozens of times. Among the downloads were accounts associated with a guest on Sean Hannity's radio show, a podcaster who suggested political enemies should be executed, and a self-described former seduction and pickup coach who claims to have also been a hacker. What we're saying here is that when you leak sensitive data, or when you leave it in a place where it can be easily obtained, you are no longer acting in a leadership role of handling a criminal investigation or a court case. You are instead an accessory to any future use by hackers and others who could then take that voter machine data and use it to manipulate future elections. These are not, you know, these are serious things. Access to U.S. voting system software is tightly regulated, the Washington Post writes, and the government classifies these election voting systems as, quote, critical infrastructure. But the records that were reviewed show that how these files copied from state election systems were distributed to other people in multiple states. The threat is real. The threat is right from the people who are saying things like, make America great again. Those are the people who have taken classified and perhaps top secret documents and stored them carelessly, or, God forbid, have done something else to ensure that that data is shared, stolen, purchased, even accessed. Just accessed is enough. This is material in some cases where, much like you see in movies or shows, you know, you have to go into a secured room, supervised, in order just to look at what some of this information might be. And to learn that it's sitting in a cardboard box in a closet in Donald Trump's Florida home, just imagine if you had that document, much less 300 of them, in a box in your home, and federal agents showed up with a search warrant. How do you think you'd feel about that? How do you think you'd be treated? I'll tell you how Luke would be treated. He'd be getting nothing but zucchini bread in the clink while he was awaiting trial. The double standard is messed up. Sorry, the zucchini bread was just too early. You know, I'm sorry. In your case, you'd be denied zucchini bread. You would think it was cruel and inhuman punishment.
I was say you're treating me to my zucchini bread if I'm
awaiting trial. Yeah, no, sorry. I take that back.
I'm just so confused on your just disdain for the zucchini. Yes, this story is extremely upsetting, but how you have to weave your anger about the zucchini into it as well, I think that's unacceptable.
You're really going to force me to give zucchini another try.
So. Well, the problem is I can't bring my grill to work with me on Thursday or Friday, but I'll have to figure out a way to... Reheated grilled zucchini isn't good. I'll be with you on that one. Yeah.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
But no, this is the double standard for... You have the crowd that has been in favor of law and order for as long as I can remember. And that's been the Republican Party. And there were chants of lock her up over using a personal email account to send sometimes what may have been classified with the like lowest level of security, but still classified information. I understand that. It may have leaked onto that server. And she sat before it. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton sat before Congress and was grilled for hours upon hours. And there was no wrongdoing. She was cleared in all of it at the end. But it was all hoopla. It was all just to drum up the right-wing outrage. And now that same crowd is just like, oh, well, it's fine. Our own senator, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, said that, oh, yeah, it's super important for classified information to stay classified unless Donald Trump wants it declassified. Unless he did it and he wanted to take it to Mar-a-Lago, then it's fine. Then I don't bat an eye at it. And that's what our senator says, because there is a double standard for Trump can do no wrong, but lock her up and harsh punishment for everybody else.
Or even, I mean, look what people are saying on the Republican side since Dr. Anthony Fauci announced his pending retirement from decades of public service. You have members of Congress promising to make his retirement miserable if they take control of Congress and relentlessly pursue him for the crime of wanting to keep people alive during a pandemic while too many Republicans either were proactive or turned a blind eye to the efforts that left more than 1 million Americans dead. It's no wonder that you have not just your Liz Cheney's and your Adam Kinzinger's. There were others who voted to impeach Trump that second time. They have either been forced to resign, retire, or they were defeated in primaries, but they're still there. And their ranks grew by one this week in Colorado when State Senator Kevin Priola announced that he was changing from Republican to Democrat. He is one of the considered a moderate Republican in the State House, translation, an endangered species. And he said that he could no longer participate in a party that would condone the violence that took place on January 6th. He said he could no longer accept, quote, a violent attempt to overturn a free and fair election and continue to peddle claims that the 2020 election was stolen and one where his Republican colleagues would rather deny the existence of human-caused climate change than take action. And that's an important part. This isn't just about the insurrection. And you can still harbor doubts about the election, even though they're not rooted in anything. But I can understand maybe your partisan willingness to be open to the suggestion. But when we're talking about a changing climate or caps on insulin or some of these other issues, there was once a time when those were not partisan issues, where Republicans and Democrats would sometimes split on them, sometimes because of the cost involved or sometimes because a proposal didn't go far enough. But now these things are 100% Democrat or 100% Republican. And Priola's decision makes a difference for state Republicans who needed three additional seats if they wanted to win a majority in the Colorado State Senate. Now they need four seats, making it a much heavier lift. But again, this is Priola's been at odds with his party over climate bills, over transportation bills. He has sometimes been threatened with a recall, which is, again, not a surprise in the modern Republican Party. But his story and his willingness to change party affiliation is simply one more example that patriotism is still alive and well, that there are people who would do, as John McCain said, put country before party. It is something we should expect from anybody, from Democrats, Republicans, and otherwise. And if we could get back to that, we could have less of this cynical feeling that we're on the wrong track, even though the economic numbers show that we're moving in the right direction. But when you have people both trashing the economic recovery and squandering a state budget surplus that could help those families that are still struggling, it's a small wonder we have the divisions that we do. And so with that, we wrap up our visit today. We'll take a look more at Governor Evers' proposal for the surplus. Follow more of the news headlines tomorrow. And thank you for joining us today. I'm Pat Kreitlow along with Luke Mathers. This has been Up North News. You have a wonderful Tuesday. See you back here Wednesday.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Whatever Luke Mathers is getting paid today needs to be doubled, because not only did he bring us a Michael McDonald song, he brought us the right Michael McDonald song for the moment, as he tells us here. Yes, sometimes we do. We keep forgetting what time it is. So for those of you who said, what the hell was that? So did I.
Pat almost fell backwards out of his chair, folks, because he realized as we went to the break, he's like, all right, talk to you tomorrow. And we got one more left.
I've already got my 11 o'clock, you know, meeting and routine on the brain here. So I'm thinking 11. It's not 11. It's 9 minutes till 11 o'clock. So,
but the funny
back to Up North News, I'm Pat Kreitlow.
The funny aspect was I already had the Michael McDonald song queued up because you had previously said that Kenny Loggins was Michael McDonald. And so I was like, oh, this is perfect. And then you like fed into it even more. And so it was just excellent timing. That's all.
It was like a self-fulfilling prophecy on your part. So that's
fair enough.
That's great. Yeah. Yep. I mentioned earlier about the state Republican Party putting out something noting that this is the anniversary of the Kenosha riots. And I thought, well, there's some extra work. No, it turns out there's actually more to it. I'm looking at the Twitter thread from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel politics reporter Molly Beck, showing us that in Kenosha right now is candidate for Governor Tim Michaels, Congressman Brian Steil, and Republican candidate for Attorney General Eric Toney, touring the sites of destruction during the 2020 riots. Again, not to minimize the destruction, certainly not to minimize the harm that was done to people there. But again, to say, I doubt we're going to hear anything in there about what led to those circumstances and the problems in our institutions and in our systems that frankly can lead to all of this happening again. These are people that, what?
Not only that, though, I don't know if you saw this story because it kind of flew under the radar, but there was a federal indictment that was unsealed in the last 10 days or so, I believe. And it shows that there were outside forces from residents in St. Paul. Actually, two more individuals were charged federally, and it was unsealed. And it was five individuals total that came to Kenosha on the day that everybody's referencing right now with this anniversary. And they were out. This wasn't just the protesters protesting the Jacob Blake shooting that were doing the arson and the looting. Like, these individuals from Minnesota came from where I believe similar things were happening after George Floyd. And there are federal cases being pursued there as well. But we're finding out that these were bad actors that came, coordinated efforts to commit the crimes of looting and arson. And I have a feeling that that's not going to be referenced at all by those three Republican candidates that you're saying are in Kenosha today.
But thankfully, other people are. And, you know, looking just a little bit more at other reaction to that's come out. Here's one of my heroes, State Representative Francesca Hong, who notes on her Twitter feed, puts things in their context. 2 years ago today, on August 23rd, 2020, Jacob Blake was shot and seriously injured by police officer Rustin Shesky in Kenosha. Shesky shot Blake seven times in the back in the presence of his children. Kenosha County DA Michael Gravely did not charge Shesky, and in April of 2021, it was reported that he had returned to regular duty. Representative Hong goes on to write, "There is no excuse that Shesky is out patrolling freely while Jacob Blake lives with the unjust scars of police brutality. Black Americans continue to be targeted and murdered by police, and our criminal justice system aids and abates their white supremacy. Representative Hong goes on to write, I extend my love to Jacob Blake and his family and pledge to do better in the legislature to bring about accountability and justice for the many that have suffered at the hands of police violence. Our policies must change. Our cultures must change. Public safety should include a dedication to rooting out white supremacy in our law enforcement systems, as whiteness isn't the only thing deserving of preservation. Black Americans deserve to feel safe too. Incrementalism, complacency, and cynical politics cannot stand anymore. It is past time for Black lives to really matter here in Wisconsin. Now, if you are a white Wisconsinite and you don't agree with every word of this, that is absolutely your right. Some of this language from Representative Francesca Hong is strong. Where you see white supremacy, you may choose to put in, you know, white privilege. Other people even bristle at that notion, thinking that they have no privilege, because somehow they have lost the ability to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. But it is true that our policies must change and that there must be a change in culture. And there have still been, in the 2 years since that man was shot 7 times in the back, there are still too many instances of people who were not a threat being pumped full of bullets while white mass shooters are taken down peacefully. And that's just too convenient to be coincidental. So just remember that for the rest of today. When you're hearing about the anniversary of the Kenosha riots, no, this is the anniversary of something terrible that happened in Kenosha that then led, as Luke said, to outsiders coming in to agitate more trouble, all in the name of trying to bring justice to people of color and communities of color who are not looking for any special treatment, but just looking to no longer be singled out and put in harm's way to a greater degree than you or I would be for the same kind of behavior. So it's not the place where we would necessarily want to wrap up our visit today. And I mean it this time that we're wrapping up our visit, but this is some of the things that just came down that I wanted to keep you all up to speed on. Brewers Law or Brewers One. See, look at that. I'm thrown off.
It's combobulated. We need to get Dan Schaefer back and get some recombobulation going on.
Well, especially when you went out of the Kenny Loggins song that I mistakenly said was Michael McDonald, remembering that Michael McDonald was the background singer. You hear him about as much as you hear Kenny Loggins in that song. It was not a complete, you know.
Okay,
it was not a completely unforced error.
YouTube didn't give the accreditation then at that point. It just said that it was Kenny Loggins' Heart to Heart. Sorry. I don't know the background, I guess.
No. It was still a mistake. I own the mistake. Okay. I own the mistake. I'm just explaining that. But then again, Michael McDonald is in, I don't know, 97% of all Yacht Rock tunes in some way, shape, or form. He's a background singer in so many of these.
Or the inspiration. And yeah, it's just...
Or the inspiration. Yes, exactly. So thank you again for playing along. Few too many unforced errors today, but we'll work on that. There's always tomorrow. So thanks again for your visit. And since I already said goodbye once before, I'm just going to shut my mouth.